Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
On this date in 1957, Arkansas Governor. On this day in 1957, the year of my birth, Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus called out the National Guard to prevent nine black students from entering Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. That on this date. That's like the highlight of this day, according to the New York Times. In 1781, the city of Los Angeles, the community of Los Angeles, was founded. Was founded by Spanish settlers. Los Angeles. Yeah, you can go down there now. It's the it's called Alvera Street. It's kind of where the first Los Angeles settlement was put in. In 1888, George Eastman received a patent for his roll film camera and registered his trademark, Kodak. There you go. And hence you have the Eastman Kodak Company. In 1970, the American Expeditionary Force in France suffered its first fatalities in World War I on this date. In 1951, in the first live coast-to-coast TV broadcast, President Harry Truman addressed the nation from the Japanese Peace Treaty Conference in San Francisco. How about that? Did not know that. That was the first live coast-to-coast TV broadcast. In 1957, Ford Motor Company began selling its ill-fated Edsel line. In 1972, swimmer Mark Spitz, who trained in Sacramento, yeah, don't you know, became the first person to win seven gold medals in a single Olympic Games when the United States won the 400-meter relay in Munich. Yeah, Munich, which is where the Israeli athletes at that same Olympics were taken and murdered. In 2002, singer Kelly Clarkson was voted the first American Idol on the Fox TV series. In 2006, the crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin, 44 years of age, died after a stingray barb pierced his chest. In 2007, toy maker Mattel recalled 800,000 lead-tainted Chinese-made toys worldwide, a third major recall in just over a month. Where were they made? China. Shocker. In 2008, Senator John McCain accepted the Republican presidential nomination at the party's convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. He would go on to lose to Senator Barack Obama. In 2008, Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick pled guilty to obstruction of justice in a sex scandal forcing the Democrat out of office. That's part of it. Now, I went to history.com and I went through their version of Today in History. I like the New York Times version because I've done it for a long time. On this date, Geronimo surrendered. September 4th, 1886. Apache leader Geronimo surrenders to U.S. government troops. For 30 years, the Native American warrior had battled to protect his tribe's homeland. However, by 1886, the Apaches were exhausted and hopelessly outnumbered. General Nelson Miles accepted Geronimo's surrender, making him the last Native American warrior to formally give in to U.S. forces and signaling an end to the Indian Wars in the Southwest. Born in 1829, grew up in what is present-day Arizona and Mexico, his tribe, the Chiricahua Apaches, clashed with non-native settlers trying to take their land. In 1858, Geronimo's family was murdered by Mexicans. Seeking revenge, he led raids against Mexican and American settlers. In 1874, the U.S. government moved Geronimo and his people from their land to a reservation in East Central Arizona. Conditions on the reservation were restrictive and harsh, and Geronimo and some of his followers escaped. For over a decade, they battled federal troops and launched raids on white settlements. During this time, Geronimo and his supporters were forced back onto reservations several times. In May of 1885, Geronimo and approximately 150 followers fled one last time. They were pursued into Mexico by 5,000 U.S. troops. In March of 1886, General George Crook forced Geronimo to surrender. However, Geronimo quickly escaped and continued his raids. General Nelson Miles then took over the pursuit of Geronimo, eventually forcing him to surrender, and that September near Fort Bowie along the Mexican border. Geronimo and a band of Apaches were sent to Florida and then Alabama, eventually ending up at the Comanche and Kiowa reservations near Fort Sill in the Oklahoma Territory. There, Geronimo became a successful farmer and converted to Christianity. He participated in President Theodore Roosevelt's inaugural parade in 1905. The Apache leader dictated his autobiography published in 1906 as Geronimo's Story of His Life. He died at Fort Sill in Oklahoma on February 17th, 1909. How about that? Also on this date, in 2014, Joan Rivers died. Yeah. She was one of the first major female comedians of her time. Spent a lot of time on Johnny Carson until she and Johnny Carson had a falling out. And so be it. On this date in 476, the Western Roman Empire fell. Romulus Augustus, the last emperor of Western Roman Empire, is deposed by Odoacer, a German barbarian who proclaimed himself King of Italy. Odoacer was a mercenary leader in the Roman Imperial Army when he launched his mutiny against the young emperor. So, there you have it. Now, I want to play for you on this date in 1969, Radio Hanoi announces the death of Ho Chi Minh. So I want to play for you Admiral Stockdale. And he's going to talk about torture and he's going to talk about the death of Ho Chi Minh and something that to me is really interesting. You're going to hear a couple of incredible stories along about torture and his ability to resist. So here's Admiral James Stockdale. He's a recipient of the Medal of Honor for his leadership at the Hanoi Hilton.
One of my original breakthroughs was self-disfiguration. And I was given a lot of times in the ropes in room 18, which is the main torture chamber of Wallow Prison.
Now, the ropes is this system where they bind your arms behind you and they use a series of bars and they tighten and they tighten and they tighten and they, you know, your shoulders get ripped out of their sockets. I mean, it's an awful, awful thing.
Also serves as a kind of a ceremonial chamber when no prisoners are in there, in that they have the only room in the building, the great big building with plate glass windows, and they had big heavy quilts that they drew across them. Okay, well, I was in there, and they were about at their wits' end, and they said the two officers were working over on me. Pig Eye, my torture guard, was always there to take me where they wanted. And it was about mid-afternoon. They said, okay, you've done okay today. Now you want to get washed up. Well, I knew what that meant. That meant we were going downtown that night. In Heartbreak Hotel, a lot of prisoners had only access to this shower head that was in a regular cell with two cement seats. Beds. But this was dedicated to showers that they didn't have anything else to do. So you walked in and you went between these beds and then you saw the spigot and you... pretty soon the water started coming out and you were to take your clothes off and he hands you the soap and the razor and slammed the door because he had other errands to do. And as soon as I could, I got my head wet and lathered up and I started with that safety razor. I was cutting an inverted I was cutting a track down the top of my head that I judged would make it impractical for them to try to take me to downtown. And then he came back in the peephole, and I ducked down, just showing him my behind, which is all he could see, and because I was stooped over, and I didn't realize that I was bleeding so bad. And then he came in and grabbed me, and he grabbed my arm, and he said, he knew he was in trouble too. But there was blood running down my shoulders, and there were secretaries in that courtyard that we went by, and they were looking, and that was the headquarters prison of the whole country of North Vietnam. So they had officers, and they had every other thing you'd expect. And he took me back into this room, and boy, those guys, those two officers, they said, "Oh, how dare you, how dare you?" And I just inadvertently got down in the position for the ropes. And he said, "You have no right to take the ropes." I knew I was getting him screwed up. And finally they said, "We'll get a hat. So we'll take you down to the press conference with a hat on." So as soon as they locked the door, I looked around for something else to do damage to myself with. And I saw the old toilet can that had been there for years, and I knew every chunk of it. But that was infection, and there one thing. And then I said, "Well, what's wrong with this mahogany stool?" Bang, 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 bang. And the secretaries across the hall wondered what the noise was. And
so when he's making that bang motion, he's simulating hitting himself in the face, right, with it, right, near his eyes.
They started shaking the door. Couldn't see him. But by the time they got back, my eyes were closed. And there was no question about it. They couldn't do anything. I said, "What do you want me to tell the commissar?" I said, "You tell the commissar the CAG decided not to go downtown tonight." They told me that we think they're going to put you in the Mint pretty soon.
The amazing stuff, right? I mean, and his rules. Back U.S., right? One was never bow to them in public. Another one was never let them put you on television. And so that's how he got out of being used for propaganda purposes. And so here's a little bit more of it.
And that was kind of the end of the line. There was an old privy outside it. And they had a signal system that you could take a vertical wire that the outsider wouldn't even realize was up there. And if you moved it this way, that meant there was an old bottle under that sink. And if he had a message for Stockdale, he would know that he had a message in the bottle. And so forth, either way. Or if it looked like it was booby-trapped, you'd just push it back. There was even a position for that if it was... Okay, so I was down there, and I was exchanging notes and getting things done. And then I had a kind of a nice note from a guy. And what we were using for paper and pen was tough toweling that was their idea of toilet paper and rat manure. You'd lick it, and you could print it right by and get another piece. And so a voice said...
Amazing, right? Toilet paper... and rat manure. That's how they wrote.
And I was careless on this. He sneaked up under the door, and it was kind of a complicated thing. But he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm reading these letters my wife sent me, which was authorized. They would leave letter." And he said, "No, your hand was moving." Uh-oh, I knew it. Well, then he ran, and he got the turnkey, and they came in, and they got me out, and they told me to put my hands up. This is the typical prison shakedown position. In the meantime, I'd had sense enough to put it in my crotch of my pants, where I did that because I concluded, and I think I'm right, that there's a great connection between farm boys in Illinois and farm boys in rural Vietnam, and they have a sense of propriety against intruding in other people's private parts. And as far as I know, that's true. I don't know, but because I didn't have it up there well enough as I was walking back in, it rolled out of my pant leg, and then they had it. Well, There was something in the air. I don't want to make this too mysterious, but it was kind of a dark and dreary night. As they walked me over to the other side of the camp and put me in a little privy-like place I'd never seen before that was full of cobwebs. It would only accommodate one man. And I think they were just doing something to get me out of that camp, and so I knew I'd go in room 18 the next morning. And the man came in with leg irons, and he put them on me, and they were squeeze irons. They were built to put pressure points on your legs so you couldn't sleep that night. And I looked down there, and he was, so help me, weeping. And not out of sympathy for me, I'm sure. But I marked that down in my book, and then the next morning when I was taken over to the other place to get the torture started for that day, there was a couple of other people were weeping. And I said, old Ho Chi Minh probably died last night. And later that afternoon, after I'd been unsuccessfully accosted to give them information, I could hold it back from this particular crowd that was working with me that day. They were kind of halfway friendly people. Something was wrong. The whole country was going bananas. And I was just laying down on my roll, assuming that the day was over. And a guy named Bug was an officer, and a snotty officer. He said, get off your feet. Get off the feet. Tomorrow is the day we bring you down. And that's the use, and that meant I would succumb. And he said, this country is in mourning. There will be dirge music in the streets tonight. Our Ho Chi Minh died last night, and we're in mourning. And, okay, well, I had anticipated that. And then they didn't let me lie down. They put me in a chair. He said, put him in a chair with ropes on his arms and traveling irons for his feet. Well, I was depressed. I said to myself, God, maybe I'm the problem here instead of the solution. I gave those, everybody that goes in these ropes did something that I said, if you did, you had to take the ropes. You cannot, that was my disciplinary system. I said, here's my orders. Remember, B-A-C-K-U-S. Back us. And it could be tapped out, but it said, it was for study purposes. B, it means do not bow in public. A, stay off the air. Never talk into a tape recorder or a microphone. C, don't kiss them goodbye when we go home. U, S.
C and K were simultaneous, were interchangeable in their code. So he says C and he says don't kiss them, right? So just so you know, C and K were interchangeable in their code.
Might be seen as United States, but what it really means is unity over self. That was the first, and I put out dozens of them, but that was the instruction. They all knew what I'd said and how I'd said it. See? Well, I was kind of, I said, well, maybe I'm the problem, because there had been people that were killed in the ropes, and then I don't know. I was just, but I said, I know one thing. I've got to change the status quo, because I'm going to be dealing with a different country tomorrow than I was yesterday, and who knows what's going to happen? They might go bonkers. And so I said, I've got to change the status quo. And with that, I got off of my traveling irons, went over, shut off the light, pulled back these blankets, and exposing the plate glass window, using the palm of my hand, which was relatively free. I had enough freedom there to get the long shards, pull the curtains back, turn on the light, get back in my chair, and sit down and just start going like this. And first of all,
so what he's talking about, the long shards, he's talking about glass from the window, and then the motion is talking about he's stabbing his wrist.
I started getting blue blood, and I said, where's the blue blood coming from? We got to get some red blood. And so I said, I said to myself, is this right? I don't know, but I know I've got to, my hand, I had run out of ideas, and I had to explore the future. Well, I you wouldn't think I had a future if you saw me. I passed out in a pool of blood. I went unconscious I was consciousless. But in the night, I had a feeling that ever since I'd started this self-defacement, that they had a suicide watch on me. Because about 2 in the night, I never ran this down, but I think they had a suicide watch on me. And somebody screamed, "Eow!" And I think that was the suicide watch. And I think he looked through a peephole and saw me in that pool of blood in front of my chair. I was groggy, and I really had to be slapped awake. But the room filled up with soldiers and the doctor and some officers and a lot of guards. And they were cleaning the room. They were like they were ashamed of it. And they were sweeping the floors, and they were putting fluid on it. It smelled like something in a funeral parlor. And the guards took my clothes out and washed them. And the officers were nasty, but they couldn't figure out what to say. Finally, I don't know the time of night, maybe 3 or 4 in the morning, they brought in a cot. And then they brought in a chair, and they put a soldier in the chair, and he put the rifle across his knees, and they let me lie in the bed with a pillow. And I passed, this has been a day. I looked up at those walls, and they're all geckos you see on all of the walls in Southeast Asia, and they're moving around, and they snipe at one another. But God, I looked up there, and to me, all the geckos were bisecting their friends, and I said, and I knew I was hallucinating, and I said, you're hallucinating. I almost laughed, but okay. So the next morning, the door squeaks open.
This is an amazing story, right, that he tells about his captivity and the death of Ho Chi Minh, which was happened, 69 would be, 30, 51 years ago today. And this is Stockdale talking about events, that were near his death. In this case, these events happening just after his death.
And I look out, and it's the commissar himself. And he sat down, and he said, "Stockdale, do you want a cup of coffee?" And I said, "Yes." I don't think I had leg irons on there, but that guy with the rifle, I don't remember waddling. But anyway, I went over and sat down across from him, and he said, "What happened last night was a catastrophe." And he said, "You know, I sit with the general staff. There will be a report will be written. It may adversely affect me. It might even adversely affect you. I can't say." But he said, "You will not stay here. We will put you back in that little place where the doctor will attend you until all traces of bandage and scars, as best we can arrange it, are gone." Well, I was out there from September to almost Christmas. And then I went back, and things had happened. I was completely out of communication there. I found out two things. One, nobody had ever been in the ropes since I cut my wrists. And secondly, the commissar had been discharged. And so from then on, their life was never the same. It wasn't happy. It wasn't just happy hullabaloo, but I shut down that torture system, and they never wanted it brought up again.
How about that for an amazing story? Yeah. I was watching this the other day because I talk about Stockdale, and it's the guys from the Hanoi Hilton that walked down Interstate 4, the path of post-traumatic winning. And, you know, long before I had a name for it or anything like that. But they walked down this path of transformation. And so I was watching this just to make sure that, you know, that I'd tell that story accurately about him defacing himself. And first with the razor reverse mohawking that strip down of his head, out of his head and out of his hair. And then second, the stool where he pummels his face. And they come and they say, holy shit. And so, but it's just an incredible story as we head out the door to start Labor Day weekend. So that'll do it here on a Friday. Yeah, that'll do it. Thanks for listening on an All Personality Friday. Yeah, that Napa Man is very fond of. And Napa Man, yeah, he's now Wisconsin Man. Badger Man. So I gotta keep, haven't heard from him in a couple days, but so anyway. All the best of luck to him and the family. Anyway, thanks for listening this week. Not sure what's gonna happen next week. Gene Sledge is at some on Gene Sledge. Jack Riley at some point is going to come on and talk about Gene Sledge. I sent him those interviews. So, so we'll get him on at some point. Probably should have Grant Newsham on talking about the DOD assessment of China at some point as well. So, and then at some point you should meet my friend Tim. So anyway, on this Labor Day, have a great one. We'll see you next Tuesday on a Friday. All Marine Radio. Out. And don't be afraid to change somebody. Oh, hold on. I'm not done yet. This is from Ohio Man. Every morning I watch CBS News, CBS This Morning, while working on my coffee maker. Lately, it's been akin to watching the Biden DNC infomercial. They clutch their pearls over the Rochester video, but everything that I see looks 100% good. The cops are talking to the guy, checking on him. Nobody's abusing him. He's on fucking PCP. It's like they've never seen what PCP enables a crazy guy to do. They fan the flames of anti-police war every day. I watched a reporter named Lulila Luciano do a report this morning on the Portland shooter's death at the hands of authorities. She gives us plenty of detail on the Patriot Prayer Bubba, with plenty of extreme right adjectives, along with some video of those badass pickup trucks flying flags in Portland. However, when she spoke of the shooter, the best adjective she could muster was left-leaning. No mention of Antifa, despite the social media proclaiming himself 100% Antifa. No mention of his prior arrest for illegal gun possession to include riots. No mention of doing 111 miles while high with his daughter in the car. She's not the only CBS reporter that is doing that. Yeah. So, does that surprise anybody? Right. No, it doesn't. And it shouldn't. Yeah, there's this condition. So, yeah, that guy's suffering from a condition called excited delirium. That is fatal for people who are, you know, extremely high on drugs and that triggers other health complications, and they die in police custody. So obviously this phenomenon happens on a regular basis, you know, and the police know it. They see it. So anyway, now I'm done. So don't be afraid to change somebody's life. I am 3/5 of the way through taking all the audio from my video presentations. And the transcription is so awful. All that I use it for is bullet points. So I'll create a bullet point, and then I'll film myself doing it. And then we'll do kind of this picture-in-picture thing. Sometimes I'm the bigger picture, sometimes the slide's the bigger picture, and it'll go back and forth. Yeah, so that's where that's headed. Anyway, so I've got to build a studio. And I've got to, what else do I got to do? I got to build a studio. And then after I build a studio, produce the video. Yep. Yeah, so I'm excited to do that. But it's going to take a little work. And then, but before I do that, I'll start writing the book again. I want to get that finished. So anyway, so I got work to do. So have a great weekend. Happy Labor Day. Don't forget that the American worker is being sold down the river as we export everything that we do to China in terms of exporting those jobs. And at some point, the American worker, the American farmer, all they ask for is just give us a level playing field, man. All right? Just do that. And if you do that, we can compete with anybody on the planet. We'll outproduce them. We'll outcompete them. We'll find a way. We'll figure it out. But anyway, don't forget to keep the American worker, the American middle class in your thoughts and prayers, because that's what has made this country what it is. It's that you could become, you know, financially mobile up the scale, that the American dream was open. And I think we've done a lot to damage the American dream in this country. And I think what you're seeing is a growing sub-middle class that is service-oriented jobs, as we've taken all of our manufacturing jobs and we've sent them other places. And then we call that free trade. And it's not. And it's not. So have a great weekend. Hour one, you're going to hear me talk about the news. And so we'll do that. And the shooting, the shooting of the guy who shot the guy that we just talked about. I can't remember the guy's name. Hold on. I don't want to. Michael. Reinol. Reinoehl. And again, to me, what he sounds like, his sister who commented for the article said that they were estranged. He sounds like a nut who's affiliated himself with Antifa, whose vision is, yeah, the government's trying to tell us what to do and take everything over, and I'm not down with that. And so, I mean, it's that crew that attaches themselves to these causes. I mean, he's arrested at a riot, armed, right? Not only with a weapon, but loaded weapon, okay? And then he's arrested driving 111 miles an hour with a loaded handgun, high, and his 11-year-old daughter in the car. And he's out free, and he killed somebody. Well, that's a shocker. So anyway, talk about that. So have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. All Marine Radio, over and out.